Hi, everyone. This is Javier, your host here at the Restore Podcast. We would love to hear your thoughts about the Restore Podcast topics, guests, your favorite episodes, or whatever you may want to let us know. And I am so happy to announce that now you can do that simply by texting us by going to the show notes. There, you will see a link that simply says, send us a text message. Click on it. Don't remove the number there that you will see and simply send us a text. Simple as that. So don't wait. Go to any episode show notes and text us now. Let us know your thoughts. We can't wait to hear from you. God bless.
Welcome to Restore, a podcast seeking to restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church. And now your host, Javier Diaz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome or welcome back to the Restore Podcast, a podcast seeking to help restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church to what God would have it to be through His grace and Spirit. My name is Javier. I'm your host, and this is episode 101. On today's episode, I had a great conversation with Kevin Christensen. He is the head of Hope Studios, a recently established cinematic department under Hope Channel International, which is operated by the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He and his team are the ones behind the feature film, The Hopeful, that just last month, as I'm sure many of you that hear and listen to this podcast know, had its theatrical release, the first ever Adventist-produced movie to be released in this way. Perhaps many of you listening went to go see the movie with your family and friends. In our conversation, Kevin unpacks his faith journey, his path to becoming head of Hope Studios. We, of course, talk about The Hopeful and so much more. I know that you will be blessed and perhaps challenged by this conversation. Before we jump into this conversation, though, perhaps many of you may already know, and I want to remind you, if so, or make you aware that you can now bring the movie, The Hopeful, to your church and make it an evangelistic movie night, even a fundraiser perhaps for Pathfinders. So make sure to go to thehopefulmovie.com, that's thehopefulmovie.com, and sign up and get all the information. Hundreds of churches have already done so. You can find the link on the show notes. With that said, let's jump right into my conversation with Head of Hope Studios, Kevin Christensen. Well, it is my honor to welcome Kevin Christensen to the Restore Podcast. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Kevin. It's been great to hang out for the last 24 hours or so, a little bit. Thank you for the invitation to the International Christian Film Festival. Did I get that right?
Yes.
So we've been watching some interesting documentaries and interesting movies and so on, and just hanging out, having great conversations. But now we get to sit down and officially have this conversation.
Yes.
So welcome.
Thank you.
Let me just start by asking the question that I ask everybody here, especially when it's their first visit. So Kevin, tell us a little bit about your faith journey and how you ended up doing what you're doing now.
It was never the plan. I mean, in kind of like every aspect of that, between film, between doing, you know, kind of faith-based content, doing, you know, official stuff with the church. Yeah, I wouldn't say that any of that was initially the plan. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio. Okay. So if anyone knows the Kettering area where there's Kettering Health, yeah, and all of its hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so that was where I grew up. And so my mom was involved with the healthcare system there. She sat on a number of boards. So I kind of knew like the healthcare side of things. Mm-hmm. And then most of the people that went to school with me, you know, their parents were doctors or hospital administrators or whatever. And so I kind of knew like healthcare, and I knew like church, because, yeah, I went to church every week. And then I knew, you know, education. And that was kind of like the three things. And like my dad worked for a state university doing coding work for them.
Okay.
And so, you know, as a programmer, I knew that side of things, mm-hmm, but that was kind of the extent of what I was exposed to. So, mm-hmm, so when I went to college, I studied international business management at Southern Adventist University, and I figured, okay, I'm going to go down the path of business. And then every summer I interned with Kettering, And I really enjoyed my time there. I love the people that I worked with. It's a great community. But it was not at all related to like film. Wow. And so I really kind of thought like, okay, that's the path that I'm going to go down. And then I started getting involved with actually improv, at Kettering Church.
Really?
Carl Hafner, who was our senior pastor there for a while, he had come from Walla Walla, and, he started teaching us how to do improv. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And I was kind of like trying to find my place, you know, in that awkward time in high school when you're like, oh, am I the cool kid? Am I the smart kid? Am I the sports, like really talented, athlete, which I was not. One of the girls from my class went from like academy to, well, she got a basketball scholarship and then went to the WNBA. Mm. So obviously that was not me. Like she took the cake with that one. And so, yeah, I came across improv and I was like, oh, well, this is really cool. I can be creative. And it's like a safe space to go kind of explore other aspects of your creativity and personality.
Okay.
And so when I went to Southern, I started getting involved with Destiny Drama Company that we had there, a traveling drama company. And we would perform on the weekend, a lot of like youth rally kind of things, schools. And then I started the sketch comedy show and I liked that. And so when I graduated, I decided, to just kind of pursue these, I don't know, creative itches that I had. And okay. I was like, I don't know what this looks like. I'll do whatever I can. You know, I'll get an extra role on set when they're like, we need a ton of people in a crowd. And I was like, okay, sure. I'll be one of those guys, you know, and kind of worked my way up from there and found myself in the film industry. And then in the meantime, I was also doing some things in between projects for the church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do a project here and there. And I was really wanting to see the church kind of step up its media. I felt like, and this is my own personal opinion, I felt like the church had kind of gotten stuck in very much a, you know, 50s, 60s style of stuff. And we were just doing it with younger faces and with like, you know, 1080 and 4K. And like we were increasing the production quality, but the style had gotten locked in time. And our stats, when you start looking at the stats of who's watching that stuff, the stats also got locked in time. So a lot of those audiences kind of aged with the content. And that personally concerned me because there were people that graduated with me. There are people who had gone K-12 all the way even through, you know, Adventist universities who graduated and were no longer involved in any kind of church, any kind of faith, you know, in their life. And that really bothered me. And I was like, why are we really focused on one group and kind of saturating that particular group? And you've got a whole nother demographic here that I don't feel like is really being served. And so found myself doing some of these projects for the church on the side. Until one day the opportunity opened up to be able to bring all of those things together. And so my faith journey with that was one that was it's not entirely by choice. I had a number of experiences where things didn't work out the way that I'd hoped.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, actually, I felt like God plucked me from some fires right before they burst into flame.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, okay. You know, thank you. Thank you, God.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I mean, you know, very, very short. It's sort of like, a few years ago, I got into a car accident. I was going to Atlanta and hit a patch of water, spun out, went into the median and I was like, oh man, this is so bad. I was on my way to an interview and I didn't have like a stable income at the time. So I was like, I could really use this job.
Sure.
And I was so, you know, bummed about it. And then when the cops showed up, they said, hey, sorry, it took us so long to get to you. There's a huge pileup about a mile down the road with people going to the hospital.
Wow.
And you very quickly are like, oh, okay, God. You know what? Now my frustration has turned to thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, I don't want to be in this situation, but I'm thankful that it happened here and not a mile down the road. You know, and I think sometimes we see those like short-term payoffs. Mm-hmm. And when we get those short-term payoffs, it's really easy to have faith.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, well, I had faith for 30 minutes and then I found out that it, you know, was for a reason. But I think we also hit some points in life where we have to wait a lot longer for the payoff. Mm-hmm. And that's really where our faith gets strengthened, is when we're waiting for that payoff, not knowing if it's even going to come in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I definitely had a few of those experiences. You know, even I was signed with a talent agency, and they had kind of a film side and they had a promotional side. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a lot of promotional work, trade show type of things, and it was the first time I had like stable income since like my internship in college, and I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
I could finally like get an apartment, and I was like, oh man, I'm like adulting now. This is nice. And it was kind of taking me away from the film side of things, and that's really what I wanted to pursue. But I had started to get comfortable. I was like, okay, you know, it's pretty easy, you know, consistent work with stuff. And I got to the end of that season, and I was pretty confident because I'd been really crushing it at work. We're kind of gauged based off of how many signups you get, people that are doing what we call activations.
What is that, for those that may not know? What is an activation? What kind of gigs, if I can use that word, are you getting at this time, or what kind of work?
So I had, through the talent agency, they had a number of different clients. One of whom was a very well-known car company. And so I was signed to that client.
Okay.
And so I exclusively did, auto shows for that client.
Okay.
And so we would take the stage, we'd talk about like new features that the cars would have. It was not supposed to be a sales type place. Because like when you go to a car lot, like the person there, they're trying to sell you that car.
Right. Just promoting
this
particular car.
It's a place for people to come and learn and engage in conversation, and they know that they're not going to be pressured for a sale. So the activation is, we want to get their contact information to be able to send them a digital booklet, and then as a result add them to, you know, a mailing list for promotions. And so we were kind of gauged off of our numbers with that. And, I've always been a bit of an overachiever. And so like, I was like, well, kind of getting like, I don't feel like I'm getting like pushed with this job. Like I kind of got in the flow of things, and day in, day out, you're kind of saying the same thing. And so my goal became like, I wonder how many signups I could get, you know? And I started pushing for like more and more and more. And I was really doing well with those signups, significantly better than a number of the people who had been there for a long time. And that became a threat. And so we got to the end of the year, and during the year, the head person from the car company had taken me aside when we were doing a big consumer electronics show actually in Las Vegas. And they were like, hey, whatever you're doing, like, you're crushing it. Like, you're kind of our top guy with stuff. You're getting all these numbers. I was like, oh, great. And I kind of, it was very much the, like, the Joseph moment. The father's given me, you know, the coat of many colors, and I am untouchable.
Oh, boy.
You know?
Okay.
And I became humbled very quick at the end of that season, where I got a phone call from the agency, and, you know, they're like, hey, we wanted to kind of give you, you know, your end of the year review. And I'm just sort of like, you know, getting ready to be getting all the accolades laid on me.
Yeah.
And they said, we're not renewing your contract.
Wow.
And I was like, what? I really was not ready for that. It just hit me out of left field. And I was like, why? Can I ask why not? Well, we got reports that you weren't present, and the times that you were present, you were not having meaningful conversations. I was like, how am I getting all of these signups if I'm never there? And the few times that I am, I'm not having quality conversations. And they offered to sign me with a different client of theirs, But I felt like it was a bit of a wake-up call from God saying, hey, I'm going to take you out of your comfort zone because you've kind of been praying to go this direction and you've gotten really comfortable in that direction.
Wow.
So, and the choice was still there. I wasn't forced out of it because they offered to place me with another team.
Okay.
But I was forced to make a decision. And I realized like, yeah, that's okay. This is not the direction that I want to stay in. And so I said, yeah, I don't want to come back. And I found out later, from a friend who worked there, they said, yeah, you know, that group that felt threatened, they all ganged up and lied on all their feedback forms and said, yeah, this person was a problem. This person was a problem. This person was a problem. And, you know, the agency is like, look, it's easier for us to move one guy to a different group than to have to deal with all these people. And the reason that they were doing that was because, it was self-preservation. You know, I don't really hold ill will. It's a survival mode thing. Yeah. I remember the New York show. It's the last one of the year, and I could see a fear in people's eyes because they had been with this job for a really long time, and it was all that they had, and they were worried that there were going to be cuts that were going to be made, and they did not have another source of income, another route to go to, and some of them had pretty serious credit card debt, and so they were doing that out of self-preservation, you know, because, hey, this hotshot comes in and is, you know, making all of our numbers look bad. Yeah. So, you know, we got to get rid of them.
Mm.
The crazy thing is, I said, no, you know, thank you. It's been a good run, but I don't think I need to get placed on something else. I'm going to go do other things. And I dove back into the film industry. And within a few months, COVID hit. And there were no trade shows. And every single one of those people was completely out of work. And meanwhile, I got hired to help run the health and safety department for a Netflix production.
Okay.
And here I am walking onto the lot, honestly making more money than I'd ever made. And I get a text from someone from the auto show days. And they said, I can't afford groceries this week. Could you Venmo me money?
Wow.
And I was like, wow. Okay, God.
I
don't know why I'm here, but I feel like you plucked me from that fire. And I'm thankful for that. So that's kind of been a bit of my faith journey with stuff.
Yeah.
And even just making this film, there's been so many things along the way where you put your plans in place and you get down to that 11th hour and there are moments that are completely outside of your control. And if it doesn't work out, all the work you've done for the last year, 2 years, 3 years, all for nothing.
Yeah.
And we're forced to rely on God. And, you know, I praise the Lord for this, that with this project, he came through.
He did.
Right at the 11th hour.
Wow.
But it's, for me, it's been a journey of, oh, ye of little faith.
Okay. I so appreciate you sharing that, just to see from starting, in Kettering, a very Adventist area, if I can say it that way, right? So growing up in that realm, and then going from business to the film industry, I mean, that's a pretty big jump, but see how God was leading you in that way. But then in the midst of that, right, it seems that God was in some shape or form, perhaps, however we want to say, allowing all those circumstances to form you as a follower of Jesus, if I can say it that way, right? And so you have to make some big decisions staying with the company. That surrounding, that must have hurt. I mean, as much as you were okay with, you can answer it. I'm going to ask it. That, I mean, to know that these people that you were working with at some degree were saying these things, that's got to sting at some level, no?
It does. I think for me, it was more shock just because, you know, people never said anything to my face.
Yeah.
It was, and you're traveling all the time. Like you're away from your friends a lot. You're always on the road with, you know.
So you're alone.
Yeah. Yeah. You're alone and you start to have, you know, this team that's around you and you're like, oh, okay, all right, these are my friends, these are kind of my work family with things, and you know, to find out that you're like, oh, behind your back they're not supportive of you. It's very self-preservation. It's very, you know, you're looking out for yourself and yourself alone. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, I think it more was just surprising to me. I mean, despite that, like, there were people in there that I've still stayed friends with.
Awesome.
There were some very good people that were in there that I know were not participating in. You know, that right. feedback that came right. in. It was crazy because I was watching The Chosen, and one of the people from my team is in The Chosen.
Oh.
Like, they're one of the main characters in
okay.
it. And
well, good for them, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, like, it was cool to have those experiences yeah. and to realize, you know, there's going to be some good people that are going to be supportive of you. And there's some people that, you know, they have other motives.
Yeah.
And that's just life.
Right.
You know, well, then, how do you work with them?
Yeah. And just to jump in here, but as you're in that trajectory, then it seems that God puts you in a position, as you mentioned just a moment ago, to help somebody that was in that realm, right?
Yeah.
That we were just talking about. And praise the Lord for that you're able to help, regardless of whatever happened with that individual, with you and how he may have rated you or whatever. Here it is, right? Love.
Yeah.
Love no matter what.
Yeah.
And so praise the Lord. So you go from working for Netflix. And then, as you mentioned, when do you get the call or the conversation, however you want to word it, to become what is now the head of Hope Studios, and maybe unpack for us? People may not know, right? So a mm-hmm. lot of our viewers, or I should say a lot of our listeners, are those from within our community of faith, leaders, pastors, church members, of course. And so some, maybe by now they do, right? Because we're going to get to the movie.
Yeah.
This is the beauty of long format, right? But how and what is Hope Studios, right? And mm-hmm. maybe explain to us how that's, you know, an arm of Hope Channel, all of that. I'm going to leave it up to you here. But yeah, so how did you get the call, and what exactly is Hope Studios at this moment? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. And I love to joke with people that, you know, I went from working on a Netflix movie to working at the General Conference building.
Yeah.
And it's a very natural transition.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that's what everybody does. but yeah, So actually, it was around that time.
So we're about 2020, right? Because
yeah, mentioned... like 2019, because it was right before COVID hit.
Okay.
So right before COVID hit, I was doing some international media consulting, and one of the people that I wanted to meet with, they were going to be at an event in Nashville called National Religious Broadcasting Convention, NRB, and so I went there to meet with them. In the process, I met a gentleman by the name of Gordon Pfeiffer, who worked for the North American Division, overseeing a lot of the different media ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And at NRB, you have everyone from TBN to like Amazing Facts to It Is Written, Hope Channel, you know, like everyone who's there, both Adventist ministries as well as general Christian mm-hmm. ministries are there. And so they had this panel that was about faith films in Hollywood. NRB at the time was just starting to dip its toes into film. They had basically been television, radio. They started getting more into podcasting, you know, those types of media, but not really so much film.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'd started bringing in some panelists to talk about that. And it was a couple guys who were Christians in Hollywood. They didn't work on Christian films, but they were saying, here's why we have not been able to sell Christian ideas. So they work, there's something that's called packaging. And a lot of people think, oh, I just need like the story, right? If I could just get the right story, I'd pitch that story, and they'd go, great, let's throw $20 million
behind it. The right script, right?
Right, just the right script. Yeah. And I think the statistic that I read, it was like, 30,000 scripts are registered with the Writers Guild every year.
Mercy.
And like maybe 2% of them are actually bought. So, you know, saying I wrote a script, that does not really carry much of any weight. You know, it's necessary. It's a part of it. I talk about how it is it's a foundation for a house, but you don't sell the house because of the foundation. Now, if the foundation's cracked, you're probably not going to sell the house, but the foundation itself is not what sells the house. So you can't do a film without a good script, but usually the script alone is not what's going to actually sell it. So they have what they call packaging, and the package is this combination of usually a script, a director, some well-known talent. It's kind of this whole package together of the team that you're going to need. It's a lot like, you know, when you're pitching a startup company or a product and you're trying to get investors with that, they don't want to know what's the product. They want to know who's working on it. Yeah. What's their background? You know, your chief technology officer, did they just graduate from high school or did they work at Google? You kind of want to have that package that is convincing them. So these guys worked in that space and they were saying, here is why we have not been able to sell the studios on doing your Christian films, because you guys don't understand packaging. And so they were there to say, we would love to, as fellow believers, see more Christian content, but here's what you're missing. So if you start bringing us more of these elements, we can package that and we can actually start, you know, selling them on that and getting more Christian content made. Anyway, so they were doing this panel on that. I went there. Gordon was there and we got talking afterward and he was like, wait, you're working in Hollywood, but you're Adventist? I was like, yes. And by the way, most shows shoot Monday to Friday. So this concept that you're always working on Sabbath is not true. In fact, it's very common to say, I'm booked, I'm not available. They have to give you a schedule ahead of time.
Okay.
Now it's up to you if you want to accept that schedule or not. But it's very common practice if they add a day that is unscheduled, you can just say, I'm not available. That was not part of the schedule.
Okay.
And that's actually how a lot of people break into the industry, is they're called day players. So it's when someone has, because for people that don't care about having a day of rest, they will typically on the weekend take other gigs. So they may work like a TV show during the week, Monday to Friday, and then they do a commercial, say Friday, Saturday, take Sunday off, go back to their main job. So if some pickup days happen that they add into the weekend and they're already booked, it's very common practice for them to go, hey, I'm sorry, I'm already booked, I can't do it. And so then they call someone else and they say, hey, do you want to work a day on this TV show, because I've got a commercial that I'm doing instead for 2 days.
Okay.
And so so I was like, yeah, I'm Adventist. I work in the industry.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, you got to come meet these guys, you know, come meet some of the guys from Hope Channel. So we have a conversation and I was saying, you know, I'm looking at the media that is happening in other parts of the world. Novo Tempo in Brazil, huge.
Right.
They reach, I want to say it's over 80% of the population of Brazil has been exposed to Novo Tempo. Novo Tempo was so popular there that Adventist churches in Brazil started putting Novo Tempo on their like church signage because the television network had become more recognizable in the general public than the church and its logo.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was looking at stuff like that. I was looking at films that the South American division was producing. I was looking at content that was being produced out of Hope Media Europe in Germany. I was looking at there was animation stuff coming out of Romania, you know, and so I was saying, I'm looking at what is happening throughout the now 84 channels around the world, and I'm looking at North America.
All through Hope Channel.
Yes,
right?
all through Hope Channel.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering why here in North America, when we are supposedly, you know, the hub of kind of quality production, you know, everything kind of started here with Hollywood, and then you had Bollywood, and then, you know, you've got a number of other places.
Right.
And yet I feel like we have focused on one demographic and we followed that demo and we did not expand. And, you know, when a pop station stops changing its music, it becomes a classic rock. And then it becomes an oldies, and then it becomes classical. And I feel like that is kind of what happened with a lot of our media here in North America is we stopped changing the music, and we found the style that we liked and we stuck with it. And so I was saying, you know, if you're going to build that sustainable pipeline of supporters for you as an organization, but also if you're going to continue to reach new demographics, which is the mission, as I understand it, you know, you've got to change the content. And I don't just mean put younger faces on the same type of content, not new wine and old wineskins. I'm saying change out the wineskins. And there was a new guy there who had just started. His name was Vyacheslav Damian. He had just come from Hope Channel, Ukraine. And he kind of leaned forward and said, what would that look like? Like, tell me more. And I was saying, well, you know, here's how we do it. And here's how the industry has been doing it. You know, that's a very different model. And he said, let's go meet tomorrow, just you and I, and kind of explain this to me. And the very short version of it is the way that we have done media ministry is very different than the industry does film. So when you look at how does Angel Studios produce stuff like The Chosen, how do the Kendrick brothers, you know, make movies like The Forge? How does Kingdom Story Company create films like Jesus Revolution or I Can Only Imagine? Their model for doing it is very different than how we've done media ministry. And the difference is we tend to, or media ministries, I should say, tend to bring everyone in-house. They'll contract them. They'll all work for the media ministry. And that's where you start getting into certain challenges of, well, are they, do they pass enough of our hiring tests, you know, to make it? And then we hope that they have the right skills. And it starts, and it's also a lot of red tape with, paying for things, releasing funds, that type of stuff. And that's all for a good reason. And I'll explain that. On the flip side, the way that the film industry works is the big studios really work like financing companies. So they don't actually produce content. And that's what I realized when I was working on these projects for NBC Universal and Netflix and ABC. And I was never getting a check that had any of those big names on it. And I was really confused. I was like, why am I getting paid by this no-name LLC company? And I talked to accounting and they said, well, it's because the studio would never take on that kind of liability. What they do is they say, okay, how much does this movie need? It needs $10 million. Okay. So then they move $10 million from the studio into this production company that they either hired or they set up. And then that has $10 million to work with, and it can, and it's like a startup. They rent office space, they rent studio space, they hire who they need to, they do the movie, and then when they're done, everybody goes and works on something else. And that protects the assets of the studio, and it allows the production company to work at very quick speeds. And so I said, if we set up our system to work like that, that will allow us to be able to move at the speeds that we need to do. And it actually protects the church from liability, because every project that a media ministry is doing in-house opens them up for lawsuits for every single one of those projects. That other example that I gave, you could not sue, say, Universal Studios, and it's, you know, probably billions of dollars worth of assets because Universal Studios didn't make that movie. That no-name company made the movie. That LLC made the movie. So the most that you could tap into would be $10 million, and that's it, because those are all the assets that they have. And so I was like, from a stewardship perspective, this is a model that can help protect God's assets. And also from a feasibility perspective, when you don't have all of those assets that you're dealing with, you don't need to have a bunch of committees. You don't need to have a whole bunch of red tape and sign off. You're saying, I am investing in a project, or I'm putting the money into that company, and it can do what it needs to do. And now you start to separate the creatives from the committees.
So that's what, just to jump in here. So that's what Hope Studios essentially is at this moment, right? But exactly what you just explained for the last few minutes is that you're now looking at these different entities within our community of faith that may be producing or may have done certain films and or documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. And then you say, hey, let's partner and we're going to help finance this and promote it and things of that nature. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. So I had this conversation with Vyacheslav.
Yeah.
And over the next couple years, COVID hits, they do some restructuring. And I personally am getting a bit burned out. And here's another one of those God plucked me from the fire stories.
Yeah.
So sure. I'm working on this film in Manhattan for Netflix. It ends up becoming like their number one movie for a couple weeks on that. This was right about the time that Netflix had started doing the like top 10 stuff. Yeah. And so, you know, big project. And most of the people, you know, that just sort of like saw what I was doing on Facebook or Instagram, they're like, oh my goodness, like, oh, that's so cool. You're working on these big things. And why would you ever want to leave that? And I'm like, well, that glamour of it wears off pretty quickly because it's very, you know, it's long days, 12-hour days. You're on your feet all day. I sort of explain to people, if you like being on a construction set all day, you will love being on a film set. But like, if you think that it's just, you know, you're hanging out with celebrities all day and kind of just chit chatting and then, you shoot something and then you like go to lunch, like that is not how it is.
Right,
and so I was getting really burned out and,
it's work.
It is, yeah, and I was specifically working with the health and safety unit that was dealing with a lot of the COVID testing and protocols and all those kinds of things. And it was good that we had that because the way that the unions work, people that don't work so many days, they don't qualify for health insurance. So if people weren't working, a lot of people in the industry, and most of these people, these are blue collar type jobs. Don't think. The five, you know, celebrities that are getting paid millions of dollars. I'm talking, it's like when you go to a basketball game and you're like, well, the NBA players don't need to be making all that money. And you're like, it's not about them. It's the guy that's trying to feed his family by selling popcorn.
Yeah.
It's the woman who's, you know, trying to put her kids through school by doing parking, you know, helping in the parking lot. It's for every one of those, you know, 10 people that you see that's making millions of dollars, there's, you know, thousands of people that are just doing regular jobs. And that's, you know, very similar with the film industry is like you have five celebrities on set, but then there's like 400 crew people that are just average people trying to, you know, pay
their living,
pay their dues. Yeah. So it was good that we were getting them back to work, but it was burning me out. And so, about that time I got the call from Vyacheslav and he said, hey, we would like to launch this new thing, launch this cinematic arm, and we'd love to have you come and head it. And it's kind of that model that we talked about like 2 years ago. And I've been working with our adcom and, you know, getting them on board with this. And
all the committees.
Yeah. All the committees, and God bless him for the work that he did to do that. And Derek Morris as well. Derek Morris was president at the time, which he hails from Florida here as well.
Yeah. He's been on the podcast before he retired or semi-retired, I guess now. But yes.
And so, you know, they saw the potential for this and said, okay, we think that there's value in launching a cinematic arm. And so that became Hope Studios. And so... that's why I make that joke of, I went from, you know, Netflix to GC. It's a natural transition.
Absolutely. well, thank you for sharing that. You know, I love the details, and that's why I love listening to how somebody has been led in their journey of faith to do what they're doing now, whoever it is. And so I can see, just to come full circle, as you just mentioned, just to feed off what you just said, the way that God has been leading you to this very moment, right? And how then you come into this new branch of Hope Channel, heading this studio, that's on you to the Adventist church, if I can say it that way, in this way, in the way that you're explaining it. And then comes, and you, this is where we're going to start unpacking now, what everybody at some level probably is waiting to hear as well when it comes to the movie, The Hopeful, right? Mm-hmm. So, by the way, Kyle was going to be on. He was sick. He got sick early this morning, or he let us know. And so, Kyle, we hope that you're doing better as we're recording this. But tell us how that began to develop in the sense of having this film, The Hopeful, and then saying, you know what, let's put it in theaters and have this big production, as in inviting everybody to go and watch it there. So give us a little bit of that background of how that came to be. And I'm just going to lay it there so you can just flow with the loaded question. The question that has already been answered a lot by this time online, right? So obviously, as we're having this conversation, the theatrical release has been done. So mm-hmm. we want to know what the results were as well. So how it came to be, the results of the theatrical release, but also within that frame, the one question that was asked so many times online on social media, and you're, because you already know where this is, mm-hmm. where this is going, is what is the difference between the film, The Hopeful, and Tell the World, right? That came mm-hmm. out 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, Kevin, go for it. That's like three or four questions in one there, but they're all in the same realm,
and
right?
And go.
And yeah. go, yeah.
well, first, let me talk about a precedent in the film industry
okay.
that I think has been very confusing to Adventists because we've not really been involved in that space, but it is not confusing to kind of anyone outside of our faith community.
Right. And forgive me for jumping in, but just to be clear, and then I'll stay quiet so you can answer. But this is, just to reiterate, the first time ever in the history of our church that a film has been in the theaters in this capacity, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is the first. We've had, you know, there's been other Adventist stories that were told on the big screen. I mean, even, you know, globally released, you have Hacksaw Ridge.
Right.
You know.
But
that was not through the church.
Right.
No. So this is the first time that the church has financed a project
okay.
and officially supported it in a capacity where it went on, you know, a proper distribution, like nationwide scale. So yeah. we released in 900 theaters across the country. And there's been other projects, you know, for example, I graduated from Southern. Every, I don't know, a couple years or so, it sort of varies as to when they release them. But every so many years, the School of Visual Art and Design produces a film.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have one that's showing at ICFF, International Christian Film Festival, right now.
Yeah, I think we're going to watch it later.
Yeah, I think it's showing today.
Yes.
Really well done. And so, you know, they'll produce that. But they will do a private screening. So anyone can rent out a theater and they can show something. but this is the first time that the church has officially supported something that went
mm-hmm.
like and got proper distribution.
Okay.
So
how it started?
Going back to
The Hopeful came to be.
So a few years ago, it's probably at least 4 years ago. I met Kyle. He was teaching at Southwestern Adventist University.
Okay.
Happened to be there for something else. And a friend said, hey, there's this guy. He's from Australia. He's teaching film here and he just won an Emmy.
Mm.
I was like, oh, that's really cool. And he was like, yeah, you're doing film stuff. He's, you know, doing obviously film stuff. You guys should just meet.
Right.
So I show up at his office and was like, hi, I'm Kevin. Our mutual friend Jerry said we should meet. Tell me what you're doing. I'll tell you what I'm doing. You know, and then we just ended up talking for probably a couple hours or so. And in the process, he shared with me his journey with working on Tell the World. Mm-hmm. So Kyle had worked for the Australian Union Conference, the media center that they had there. And the AUC said, we want to tell our story.
Mm.
And so they put in a significant amount of money. Then eventually the General Conference got on board. They put in even more money. And they had a, you know, very sizable budget to produce this well.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kyle went to Canada and worked with a crew there and hired, you know, that's where people, that's another frequently asked question I get is, how did you find the cast for this?
Yeah.
They were local Canadians. Okay. That's what it was, is, you know, based off of the budget, they mm-hmm. had to hire locally yeah. and put a casting call out and see who was available. And
makes sense.
And I really believe that God brought a lot of skilled talent to the project. Mm-hmm. Were these people Adventist? No. Mm. Were they even Christians? Probably not. And it was an opportunity for us to be able to work with people who, you know, have a skill mm-hmm. in portraying a character, in telling a story, and give them the opportunity to be exposed to our values, yeah. to be exposed to our messages.
Our history, yeah.
And, you know, I heard a question posed at it was a Christian film meeting, mm-hmm. and someone said, if Christ returned before your film was released, would it still have been worth it? Mm. Would it still have been missional? Mm. And what I love about both Tell the World and The Hopeful is that we were able to work with cast and crew who were able to experience miracles, who were able to be exposed to our values. Mm. And I think that the mission work actually started during production. Mm. It didn't start when it first got released. Mm. You know, that's what I love about being able to work with people that are yeah. not necessarily of our faith, is that the witnessing opportunity starts from day one. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wait till day 10.
Mm, yeah, of course, yeah.
So, you know, how did it come together? Kyle worked with them. They put this project together, and his initial vision was he wanted to do a feature film that was going to go in theaters. It was going to go on streaming platforms, and with more money, kind of came more committees.
Sure.
Surprise.
Yeah.
And, you know, the historians that were on board were saying, oh, you need to add this character, and you need to add that character, and you need to add this and that. And it was very much being looked at like a history book, mm-hmm. Not necessarily a film storytelling perspective. So they were, you know, the concept was, we're going to make something that, like the name says, tells the world.
Yeah.
But the focus pretty quickly became, well, an Adventist audience is going to want A, B, C, and D. Mm. And so when you start prioritizing, you know, that audience, then that's who you're making the film for. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the process with any film that you do, is you say, who's our audience for this? And let's sure. make sure that what we're doing is reaching them. So, you know, the perspective was, we've got to include this, we've got to include that. And it started to go from an hour and a half to, you know, hour 45, 2 hours, 2:15. By the time it was done, it was about 2.5 hours
yeah.
of total content.
There was.
And there was even footage that was not used. Mm. And that, it was too long to put into theaters, too long for streaming platforms to take, because it's like, it's either one movie that's really, really long, mm-hmm. or it's a series that's too short, you know, because mm. now most series are at least 6 episodes that are an hour long. So you mm. need 6 hours. So it's that awkward phase in between where you go, well, what is it? And so the timing allowed it to be a mini series.
Okay.
So Hope Channel released it as a mini series. It was also put on DVD and sold at Adventist Book Centers. And then some places combined it all together and uploaded it to YouTube.
Yeah. Now you can see it everywhere.
Yeah.
We were talking about earlier.
And so, yeah, we were talking about that, yeah. you know, the copyrights weren't put in on it on YouTube. And so mm-hmm. lots of other people have, you know, ripped it and then re-uploaded it. And right. so you can see lots of versions of that. And so what happened with that was, you know, Adventists really loved Tell the World. There was lots of people that they've used it to be able to, you know, not only see their history come to life, people that they've read about in history books, you know, kind of come to life on the screen. Mm-hmm. But they've been able to use that to share with other people to say, hey, you want to get an in-depth view of who we are? Here's a pretty in-depth series yeah. that explains us, I think, well.
Yeah.
But for people that didn't have that preamble or who weren't kind of already seeking that, mm-hmm. because as you know, on YouTube, the algorithm gives you more of what you already want.
Right.
So for the general public, It's a little hard for them to get into a 2.5 hour long, you know, if you want to call that a mini series or film or whatever, but a 2.5 hour long video that is not your faith and not your people.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came on board with Hope Studios, we were exploring what can we do to really make a splash and reach people that we have not reached before with radio, with television, with YouTube, all the means that we've done before. We're missing people that are on mainstream streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. We're missing people that are in theaters. We're missing people that want more narrative storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we reach them? And so, you know, where I started was saying one of the common practices in the industry is a combo of series and movie. So if you've seen the Bible miniseries that they did on History Channel and then it was available on Netflix, they took that series and took just the parts with the life of Christ and they edited it into a movie called Son of God and they released that in theaters.
Hmm.
Same actors, same footage, but they repurposed it to reach two different audiences. The movie Australia, a number of years ago, they also filmed a lot more footage with that, and that recently got released on Hulu as a series called Faraway Downs.
Mm.
So there's a history of, you know, kind of repurposing a story and the footage to have a movie version and have a series version. So, you know, we said this is an opportunity for us to do a 90-minute version. And we added new footage. There was footage that was not used. We actually went and shot new footage. We went to Scotland and filmed the ship, that opening scene that you see. That's not CGI.
Okay.
By the way, that is a real ship that is in Scotland.
Okay.
And, you know, that we recreated to be the Andrews family ship.
Wow.
And we worked with, new composer and, Avanis guy actually who does a lot of music for Star Wars and Disney movies, and he worked on...
What's his name?
His name is Blake Robinson.
Awesome.
And he also did...
I saw his name on the credits. I couldn't remember. That's incredible.
If you go on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you listen to music and you search up the Hopeful movie, you can hear the score. You'll notice there's like a few notes in there that you're like, well, that sounds very Star Wars-y, or like, well, that sounds very Disney-esque. It's because he also does stuff for them too. And then we worked with Jonas Myron, who wrote 10,000 Reasons, Our God, Cornerstone, stuff for Lauren Daigle, for Andrea Bocelli, and a number of others. And he wrote and actually performed two original songs, Made for You and Hope is on the Way. And so we really put this together to be a very different feel and pacing and telling of the story that was focused on an audience that has never been exposed to the story. So, you know, when I look at, okay, what is the difference between the two? Because some people say, oh, it's the director's cut of Tell the World. It's just a re-edit of Tell the World. What it is it is... intentionally, it's an intentionally different way of telling our story that is focused on a different audience that has different viewing preferences. And so, I mean, you've seen both.
Yes.
How did you feel like they were different?
Yeah. Now, in fairness, I saw Tell the World when it came out 2016, and so it being so long ago, I may have miss some of what was there or remember some of what was there. But I would say perhaps one of the things that comes to mind, because I was thinking of that same question after I saw The Hopeful, and this is just my thoughts, was obviously that it was clearly, here's the obvious, it was more concise. But within the essence of it being more concise, it to a degree speeds up a little bit of what's happening within the storyline, right? Which where in Tell the World, obviously, for 2.5 hours, it's a little bit more dragged out. I don't know if that's the best word to use, right? Where perhaps for those that are not from our community of faith may find it a little harder to keep watching for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Again, my thoughts, everybody's going to have their own opinions. For The Hopeful, being that it's an hour in, to be exact, maybe 28 minutes, 27 minutes, I think what you were saying, most people can do that, and it's not going to give you clearly the whole picture. Yeah. And not that Tell the World does as well, but obviously gives you more within its time frame. And then I would say the second part, it's threefold focus of the Second Coming, William Miller. And I don't, for those that haven't watched it, I don't want to give out the rest, but the focus on one of the main doctrines that we mm-hmm. obviously believe in, and that was clearly there, Ellen White. But then it just stopped there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So I don't want to give out, for those that haven't seen it, the way it ends, but it stops there, where my last point would be the average person, and this is my next question here, is that is watching it that is not from our community of faith would say, well, then, you know, what's the rest of the story?
These
Seventh-day Adventists that is mentioned clearly. Mm-hmm. Let me go find out. And, you know, there's this little thing called Google that people are going to go on and say, let me see who are these Seventh-day Adventists. So those are my thoughts in regards of what those differences of what I remember. Again, I haven't seen Tell the World in a long time. But that's what comes to mind. So, yeah, what are your thoughts with my comments?
I think you did a great summary right there. You want to hear the best? There you go. There's a good summary of the movie and the differences.
So speaking of the messaging, right, that I just mentioned that you were alluding to and mentioned. So clearly the title, right, the hope, where part of the message is to give hope of the second mm-hmm. coming of Jesus. What other message or messages did you want your audience to have from the movie The Hopeful, particularly those that aren't from our community of faith as Seventh-day Adventist Christians?
I think it's difficult anytime that you do a story that is, or a movie that is based on a true story, mm-hmm. whether that is based off of a book or it's, you know, real events that happen in history. There's an audience there that is, they have a lot of expectations. We've mm-hmm. all heard those conversations, right? Where it was like, oh, the book was so much better than the movie,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so whenever you're doing that and you're not doing just a work of fiction that's completely from scratch, you really have two audiences that you're trying to reach. One is the audience that knows the story and they're familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And then the other audience who's going, hey, I'm just going to be entertained and be exposed to a new story or mm-hmm. learn something new. And so, you know, there were kind of two goals with that. One is for the group that, you know, saw the trailer, maybe they were watching The Chosen or Cabrini or just, you know, scrolling on Instagram
yeah.
and were one of the, I think, 4 million people that were reached with social media ads.
Hmm.
You know, so if they saw the trailer either in the theater or on their device and said, oh, this looks interesting. Actually, I saw a comment on CBN because Kyle got interviewed with CBN. I think it was the 700 Club.
Okay.
They have a section that's about films. And there was a comment under there where someone said, I'm an atheist, but this movie actually looks pretty good. I think I'm going to go check it out.
Okay.
So for that audience, we want to make sure that we are capturing their attention quickly. We know what kind of viewing habits they have. They want a good story. They're not there going, oh, I want to be reminded of my past and my history and my heritage. That's not their history.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting exposed to this for the first time. And for that group, we wanted to reach them with a couple things. One was the honest reality of disappointment.
Okay.
We all anticipate something, whether that is a new job, a child, mm-hmm. a trip, and COVID hits, and that trip that you paid for doesn't happen.
Mm.
You met with your boss, and instead of getting a promotion, you got fired.
Yeah.
You painted the baby room, and the baby didn't make it.
Mm.
You know, we all have those anticipations, and we have those disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when we reach that point of disappointment?
Mm.
Is that the end chapter of our journey, or is it the beginning?
Mm.
Because if we just drop off there, and that's the end of our story, that's tragic. And I don't think that God wants that for anyone. When we're refined by the fire, that's what brings out the diamonds, is that pressure.
Yeah.
And so are we going to come out stronger as a result and say, I am a better person because of what I learned through that tragedy that happened, and I'm going to move forward as a result, and I'm going to maybe have a new perspective on life or faith that I would not have had if everything had just been easy.
Yeah.
Because no one has an easy life. Every single person on this planet
for sure
can tell you a story of disappointment.
Absolutely.
And so anyone can walk into this and go, oh, it looks really cool. You know, good acting and you know, this ship that's an adventure and period piece. I mean, a lot of people love period pieces right now. Very popular. And in the process, they go, oh, wow, this is a story of disappointment there.
Mm.
But that's only really the end of the first act.
Mm.
And the next two acts of that three-act structure are that phoenix rising from the ashes and saying, okay, this is not the end of our journey. This is actually just the beginning.
Mm.
And that's where the hopeful comes in, these hopeful people that say, we have hope. What this did was this brought together Presbyterians, Baptists, Methodists. I think that a lot of people both inside and outside the church forget that the Seventh-day Adventist church was a non-denominational movement.
Mm, right.
It was not a denomination when it started.
Sure.
And so, you know, we've unfortunately gotten into this mindset of, oh, well, we can't associate with Baptists and Methodists, right? It's like, well, we gotta separate out. Guys, that's who we are.
Mm.
When we started, we were Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterians who were saying, I am looking for truth.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's uniting us, is this search for truth. It's not what my pastor told me. It's not what my parents told me. It's what the Bible tells me.
Right.
And that's where they came together. And so, you know, I hope that people who come in to see the hopeful and have no exposure to the Advent movement, to Ellen, to James, to any of those people, that they come in and they're able to live kind of vicariously through these characters and experience the heartbreak, experience the disappointment, but then also experience that joy when they find hope and being reminded of that. The other group, like I said, is that we're speaking to are Adventists,
right,
who know this story, who say, this is my story. And the beautiful thing, on a side note with this, is that this film, this story, is one that transcends culture, transcends language, it transcends skin color or gender. You can go to Namibia, you can go to Brazil, you can go to South Korea, you can go to any state here in the United States.
Yeah.
And everyone looks different, they sound different, they dress different, they eat different, and yet they all share something in common.
Hmm.
You can walk into an Adventist church there, you can meet someone, and somehow they're still connected to this story.
Hmm.
And there's something that they still share as a family. And you're reminded that the family of God does not look like any one particular person or type of person.
Right.
And that's the beautiful thing about this story. And most faith stories don't have that. You know, it's a very subset of, you know, it's like Southern Baptist football coach, right?
Mm.
And that's a particular group. Or it's Latin American fishermen. I'm referencing very specific films now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of hard for some of those to transcend other cultures. And the beautiful thing about The Hopeful is we've had so many requests around the world because people are going, this is my story, and I want to tell my story. So for that group that's saying, this is our story, I also wanted to remind us that we are a movement first and an institution second.
Mm.
That the institution was formed only to support that movement of saying our mission is proclamation, first and foremost. We are a community of believers, of truth seekers that are wanting to find truth, understand truth, be open, by the way, to present truth. I think we forget that. The fundamental beliefs are not a creed. I've heard people that have gotten kicked out of churches because they said, well, I don't believe in one of the fundamental beliefs, and it's treated like a creed, and they're kicked out. The fundamental beliefs were a summary of what we kind of agree on, of saying, you know, hey, there's somebody out there who's saying, I don't know, you can't have plants inside the house, and they said that they're an Adventist. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Like, Adventists can't have plants inside the house? And you're like, no, he's just weird. But he happens to be Adventist. And he's kind of misrepresenting who we are. And, you know, I'm making up that example, but that, but what was happening at the time was there were people that were, they had kind of unique preferences, and that was getting confused with Adventist beliefs. Mm. And so they said, hey, let's sit down and make a summary. And I think they started with like 10 at first, and they were like, this is fine. Like 10 things we agree on. And then let's add to that, and let's modify, and let's always be open to this changing.
As the Lord led, right? They increased.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And so when you go back and you look at the early Adventist pioneers, these were people of true faith who were saying, I am open to wherever the Lord is leading. And the Seventh-day Adventist movement will never be a creedal organization. And so what I love about this film is that it's a reminder to people that this is who we are. Mm-hmm. We are a non-denominational movement that came together for truth. We are a group of people who cares about proclaiming the gospel and proclaiming the second coming of Christ. And we are a community of truth seekers. And that's who we're called to be.
Yeah. Oh, no,
and one other thing.
Please.
And these are a bunch of kids.
Yeah, I was,
I was
going to mention a little bit of that here at the end as well. And I'm glad you mentioned that there, that many were, of course, as many of us know, us meaning within our community of faith, were fairly young, as they were moving forward, right? One of the elder statesmen was Joseph Bates, of course, right? But going back to this essence of a movement, right? And that is the underlying story, because the story is being narrated. Mm-hmm. As literally you're on a ship with Jane Andrews as our community of faith's first missionary with his two children. That's the meta narrative, if I can mm-hmm. say it that way, in the midst that they're literally on mission, right? They're literally yeah. moving forward the mission of God while telling the history at that time. It was just a very short history that had just happened, that Jane Andrews was actually living and now he was giving to his children. And so I love that. I love that, just yeah. that in and of itself. But I love what you're saying about this continuing to this very moment. This is what we are. We are a movement. Mm-hmm. And we came together, as you said, we came together as a community of believers. As the saying that we've heard many times is, as the truth as it is in Jesus.
Yeah.
We are followers of Jesus. And we are followers of Jesus, and we believe what we believe in because we believe that this is what Jesus, our master, our savior, our Lord, who we hopefully, all pun intended, our entire hope is in him mm-hmm. and his second coming, right? And so I follow Jesus in that realm. And then our community of faith is a community that also believes that, and that's one of our fundamental beliefs, right? Yeah. So it's like in that order is that we are following Jesus. And everything that we want to be faithful as disciples of him. Is that
yeah.
fair to say?
Yeah. No, that is what Adventism is. I mean, in its purest form, is saying following Christ and following what he said with the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Of, you know, what are the most important commandments? Well, it's love God and love others.
Right.
And that is what we should be doing. And when any movement gets to be as big as, you know, the Adventist Church is with 22 million and some people even say 40 million when you include kids, because we don't include kids in that count yeah. or unbaptized or not even unbaptized. It's just people that didn't necessarily, mm-hmm. you know, update their membership or join, because we've got lots of churches that'll have, you know, 200 people in there and 20 of them are actually on the books,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so like when you start counting those, it's like, oh, we may have 40 million people. When you get to be that at that scale, there are going to be some people that start to misrepresent who we are
sure.
and that forget our history. And what is the quote about, you know, lest we not forget?
Right.
That's the greatest warning, right? Is forgetting where we come from.
And the Lord has led us.
Exactly. And yeah. so, you know, we shouldn't forget that. And I think many times we do.
Mm.
And that is where Adventism gets a bad name. Mm. That's where it gets misrepresented. That's where we start seeing, because I know that there's pastors who listen to
yeah.
this podcast. Mm. And that is where people walk away and say, this group, they're judgmental, they're not welcoming, they just care about their rules. They quote this woman, Ellen White, all the time, and they don't quote the Bible. They'll hand you great controversies, but never reference the Bible. You know, and that's where we get those misconceptions. And I mean, we were just talking about another podcast that did an episode about cults, and right. someone called in and they said, yeah, I escaped from this cult that is Adventism, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciated the fact, that one of the hosts from that show was like, well, let's give them a chance.
Yeah.
You know, just because you get a one off. Yeah.
I heard it.
And, right. And they did look into it, and I'm excited for that episode to release.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but that's where we get, you know, some of those people that are misrepresenting stuff is because they don't even actually understand who we are as Adventists and what we're about. And they start misrepresenting that. And I think that's the biggest, one of the biggest dangers to the gospel and to the church, the family of Christ is when we have bad actors who are, and it's not actors as much as we love to say, oh, should we be doing acting? The bad actors are actually people within the church that are misrepresenting our own faith. And so my hope is that we look at our history, we look at our past, and we say, okay, what were these founding fathers and mothers about? And are we still on that same mission, or have we had a bit of missional drift because we got caught up in our own personal priorities?
Yeah. Being empowered by the Spirit to continue. And I believe there's, and I know we've been talking a lot and you would agree with this just because of our conversation, that God is doing amazing things in our church as a whole.
Yeah.
There is the essence of movement. I mean, we can talk a lot about, which we should, things that we can do better, things that we haven't done right. But then we also see, I mean, I see it on a daily, weekly basis here in Florida with that, you know, realm of how God is using the people of God to move forward the mission of God in the different spaces. And now we're seeing it continuously in a different way here, specifically as we're talking about film. So coming back to that, with that said, tell us a little bit now, since by this time the theatrical release has been, I believe, completed as of this recording.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. Yes. Okay. So yeah, tell us about that. So tell us what that looked like, just out of curiosity, maybe some of the numbers, right? Everybody wants numbers. What happened during particularly, what is it, April 17th, 18th? Mm-hmm. And then here's a question many have been asking as well. How is the film now going to be distributed?
Yeah. So we had a really, I mean, it was really cool to go on social media. On like those opening nights there, Wednesday and
Thursday. Saw you there with your tux and everything.
we had a big premiere in Los Angeles, and actually, honestly, one of the coolest miracle stories came out of that.
All right, tell me more. What's that miracle story? Can I ask?
Yeah, so let me tell you a little. You know, how did the film do? So we did our premiere, and then it opened, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, 900 theaters across the U.S. Mm-hmm. We had a number of theaters that were like completely full, sold out. They were actually adding additional show times. Mm-hmm. Several of them had planned, there were about 10 theaters that had already planned to run it for a full week. And then I know at least one other ended up extending it for a full week just because they had so much demand.
Wow, great.
And that was really cool to see. And it ended up, you know, coming in top 10 U.S. box office for that.
Okay, so it came out on the top 10 for those days of any other movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So for U.S. box office and you know, for us to not be a big studio that was signed with Universal or Lionsgate or something like that, I mean— it's pretty cool. It's really cool to be like, wow, this made an impact and it was well received. I think at this time we have an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, and we've got like a 93% positivity on Rotten Tomatoes with over 100 reviews in.
Okay.
And so it's really cool to see that you know, people appreciated it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of support for it. And so that moved on to now its next phase, which is hosted screenings. So everything is shifting right now in the film industry. Like, mm-hmm. people thought it was shifting when
streaming came in.
Oh, it's shifting all over again because everybody's trying to figure out, you know, COVID moved us all away from theaters and put us onto streaming platforms. And then COVID ended and people said, I'm so tired of streaming stuff at home. Now I want to go and be in community. And now there's like this weird mix of what is community. Everyone's kind of asking that. Yeah. The church used to have a monopoly on community and they lost that because people can go find community in other spaces. You know, when you talk to, well, I've got a lot of Gen X friends that I talk to and they say, you know, in my day, you conformed or you left. Mm. And the threat there was, you know, if I leave, I'm going to struggle to find community because my community has been in the church.
Right.
Now that's not the case. You know, millennials through Gen Alpha can find community in a thousand other places. They can find it through gaming communities. They can find it through, you know, board game nights at the local bar. Mm. They can find it through, you know, CrossFit gyms,
right?
Yoga groups. I mean, there's so many, you know, just friends that all have dogs and go to the dog park together, right?
Sure.
Like, there's so many other places that people find community, especially digitally.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think as a church, a lot of churches, it's not unique to Adventism, are struggling to figure out, okay, what is community now? Mm-hmm. And so the beautiful thing about this is with The Hopeful, we said, let's actually hold off on taking it to streaming because streaming is a solitary experience. And a lot of people run it in the background anyway while they're like doing dishes or folding laundry or something, right? Mm. Half paying attention. Before we get to that spot with streaming where it's going to be a solitary experience, we really want to maximize the community experience. Okay. That was part of why we wanted to go to the cinema in the first place.
Yeah.
The cinema is the new big tent, right? So when we talk about big tent evangelism, that was from a time when the big tent was where the circus came, the sidewalk prophet spoke, the politician got on his soapbox and shared. That was why we went to big tents.
Sure.
And there's not big tents anymore. There's also a fun missionary story. If you ever listen to the Mission 150 podcast?
With David Trim and Sam.
Mission 360? Mission 150.
Mission 150.
It is because it's the 150th anniversary this year of
Jay and Andrews.
Of Jay and Andrews. Yes, time to watch The Hopeful. Yeah,
absolutely.
But he tells a great missionary story on there about someone who went over to Europe and said, I'm going to do tent evangelism, big tent evangelism. And the people there said, that's a really bad idea. You should use a hall, in a sense, almost a type of theater hall. And he was like, no, this is what's always worked. We did this in America. This is what works. Sets up the big tent. All these people come, and they're all illiterate and they can't read any of the literature that he passes out.
Mm.
And he's like, I just did all this work. Why didn't any of it work? And someone tells him, well, the educated class goes to the halls.
Mm.
The educated class does not go to the tents because the type of entertainment that happens in tents is not appropriate.
Mm.
So when you rented out a tent, you immediately said, I am only reaching one type of demographic. Mm-hmm. And that type of demographic came, and that type of demographic couldn't even read the literature you were passing out. Mm. And I believe Ellen White herself actually chastised him and said, if you'd properly invested in halls, the mission might have been completed.
Yeah, that was the context then.
Yeah. And so, you know, we look at, okay, how do we reach people now? And the beautiful thing about the cinema is that is the new big tent. And we said, that's where we want to be with people in community. It's an event where you're watching it together. You go and you discuss it. Mm-hmm. And we want to try and expand that as long as we can. And so it's done its theatrical run. And we're adding this new step between cinemas and streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hosted screenings. And so we're allowing, you know, if a church has, you know, let's say they have a gym or they've got kind of a multi-purpose room, or it's a school or university or just any kind of community center, that says, we would love to host a screening, you can go to thehopefulmovie.com. Mm-hmm. You can host a screening, and you sort of operate like the cinema in the sense that
right.
you set up a ticketed screening. That way the community, they can still buy their tickets. It's just like when we host a concert, you know, we say, oh, we're hosting so-and-so in concert, and but you've got to register, get a ticket, you know, to be able to come in. It's that same kind of concept. And that way the movie is still able to recoup its costs because, you know, these are not cheap to produce.
Right.
And if we just give it out for free, we're not going to have another one.
Right.
So this is part of that sustainable business model with that. But it means that the church is not having to pay for it unless they want to. If they want to, you know, essentially buy a group license to be able to share it with the community, they can. But if they say, hey, we don't have the funds for that, but we still would love to be the spot that's hosting it. We've driven all this demand to them because of it being in theaters and people saying, where do I watch it? And we've now made them that kind of unique supplier with that. And if a Pathfinder Club wants to raise money or a mission trip needs to raise money, just like, you know, the cinema, they can sell popcorn, they can sell snacks, whatever else, yeah. they can raise funds. And so it is...
they can make it a movie night. At
yeah,
the church,
exactly.
Right?
So, yeah. And it's what was laid out in Christ's Object Lessons, where Ellen White says mission and religion and business are one and the same. They are not two separate things. Mm. And that is exactly what we're bringing together. We're bringing together mission and business.
Mm. Well, that's great. So we'll have that on the show notes. But for those that are listening right now, I highly encourage you to go and tell your pastor or pastors, if you're listening, and many are. And church leaders, go to thehopefulmovie.com, and you will see the link there to be able to get the information to host a movie night at your church and yeah. invite your family, friends. And I think it'll be an incredible evening where they can see this film and see how God has led into this movement that we've been in. Kevin, I really appreciate your time and the conversation that we've been having. I want to ask you, with all this talk about film and all your history, right? There's a lot of creatives out there that are looking and for different ways to help with that, moving the mission forward. Mm-hmm. What encouragement would you give to anybody listening that wants a career in filmmaking or a career in being able to be in this space to empower creatives to move the mission of God forward within the gifts that God has given them? Mm. How would you encourage that person? They come up to you, maybe they got a big project, right? And they're like, "Here, hey, head of Hope Studios, what do you think? Kevin, here it is. What are your thoughts? How would you encourage those that are in our universities, those that maybe are not in our universities, but are in other universities as followers of Jesus, wanting to be faithful to their values, but wanting to use their creative gifts in this lane?
Well, I'll go back to the kind of miracle story that I wanted to tell you about.
Okay.
the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
Because it ties in where we did this screening there. It was our world premiere there. And there was a gentleman who has worked for years in the industry. Well recognizable shows, Grey's Anatomy, House, 9-1-1. The Orville. I mean, lots of shows that people have you know,
that seen. He's been part of.
Yeah. And God's been working on his heart, and he connected with a group of us because of this red carpet. And he said, you know, I've been feeling God calling me for something. He's doing something with my life, and you know, I've connected with different Christians, and a lot of them don't really seem particularly Christ-like and focused. Mm. But you Adventists kind of seem to be. Mm. And so he asked if he could come to church with us. And it was the most incredible thing watching as we all stood for song service. I looked over and he was on his knees with his arms outstretched, just tears in his eyes. Being broken and just allowing God to break him down and rebuild him into being a new person. And he has one of the most powerful roles on set. Directing, you know, crews of people and needing to know the 30,000 foot view and what is happening and what's coming up next, and very much in control, kind of the conductor of the orchestra that is a film set. I think it is, when you're in production, I think that role that he has is probably the most stressful role on set. And so to see someone with that type of power and management and responsibility, being willing to give all that control and power and responsibility over to God with his own life, it just, you go, that's what this is about. You know, and for years, I think a lot of people have said, you know, oh, Hollywood, it's Babylon, it's evil. We got to get out of there. We shouldn't be a part of it at all. And we forget that those are all God's children. That's who we're called to reach. Daniel wasn't pulled out of Babylon. He learned the way that Babylon worked to be able to reach the king and then preach that message throughout Babylon. You know, as much as God is saying, you know, come out of Babylon in the sense of, you know, don't be a part of the world, he's still also calling us to proclaim to every city, Babylon or others.
Sure.
And so it was so cool to be able to see that, you know, and that happened because of that red carpet that we were doing, because we were treating it with that level of quality. And because we were tent makers and not tent fakers. And so that's where I bring it back to your initial question of, you know, when people say, okay, I want to be involved creatively. I want to do, you know, film that preaches a message I believe in.
Yeah.
How do I do that? Be a tent maker first and foremost. Be excellent at the craft. If you are going into it saying, my goal is I want to preach a message, then be a preacher. You know, start a YouTube channel, start a TikTok, if it lasts, get on YouTube shorts, whatever, and preach your message. If you want to be an excellent writer, then be a good author first and share your values through your storytelling. If you want to be a script writer, then understand how to be a good screenwriter. If you want to be a good cinematographer, learn cinematography. If you want to be a good producer, learn the business. Understand how deals are made. What types of contracts exist? How do you license things together? You know, all those types of things. Understand how to be a good tent maker first. And your values will come through that, and it'll be more effective. But people can see through. There's a representative who works with MENA, and he talked about how I think he's with the General Conference, and he's helping to set up missionaries over in that part of the world. And he said, you know, we get people that come and say, I'm going to be a pastor. I'm going to be an evangelist. I'm going to be a missionary over there. And he goes, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You're going to be a business person. And we're going to work with you to set up a trade and to be an excellent tent maker. And you will preach the gospel through that. But if you come over and you say, I'm just here to proselytize, no one's going to listen to you. So do you want to be effective?
Yeah.
Then learn the craft. And that's where I was appreciative of people like, you know, this gentleman who is now actually talking with us and going, how do I support you? How do I work with you? How do I bring the skills that I've learned through my experience to this? And that's where I encourage, you know, creatives, especially Adventist creatives out there who's saying, I want to work on this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Go spend time. You know, Jesus spent 30 years walking and talking with the people before he started his ministry. Are you walking and talking with people? Are you working alongside the people that you're trying to reach? Because if all of your conversations are with other people in your faith bubble, and the only conversations you're having with people outside your faith bubble are transactional, how are you going to talk to them? I'm not interested in working with people that you know, that have not had exposure to the type of people that they're trying to reach, because they don't know how to communicate with them. Right? It's like someone saying, I'm going to go do mission work in China, and I've never learned Chinese, and I've never, you know, spent time with anyone who's actually from China. But I ate at a Chinese restaurant, and I'm gonna go over there and just change. No, spend time with that community. You need to understand what they value, how they communicate. You need to be able to contextualize.
Yeah,
and that comes from spending time with those people. So that's kind of my advice to creatives who are saying, you know, oh, I want to do this. Don't say, oh, I want to be a Christian filmmaker. I want to be a filmmaker who is Christian.
Mm.
You know, don't say, oh, I want to be, you know, an Adventist storyteller. Be a great storyteller who is Adventist.
Mm.
So learn that skill first. Understand your audience. And then once you've learned the skills to communicate with that audience, then preach the gospel through your art, through your work, starting with excellence.
Yeah. No, I love that. And what I'm hearing you say, to kind of summarize a bit, is, and I'm saying it in my words, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but remain faithful to the values and being a follower of Jesus first and foremost. And then as the Lord has gifted you, hone those skills, learn everything you can about what you want to do. Do it the best you can, and then embed yourself within the community and the sphere of influence of what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
right? Get to know what is around you, the society, what is at the moment what people need to hear. And we know that the solution for it all is Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But when we say it's all about Jesus, then we have to unpack that to people. Like, what does it mean that it's all about Jesus? And I firmly believe that. But people then need to have it broken down at these different levels that Jesus himself said, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And then, well, what does that mean? And so when we see that, we see Jesus spending time with his Father in prayer, lifting up the word of God, being in community. This is the way that Jesus lived. And so telling these stories through that lens of these values, and then everything else that you just mentioned and I just summarized. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah. You hit it right on the nose.
So Kevin, before we close here, just a few more questions. And here's another question that I'm getting a lot from at some level. What's next? Okay. Right. We got the hopeful. The movie's out. We hope a lot of churches and different entities are going to sign up and show it in their local venues and invite their family and friends. But what's next for Hope Studios? Can we get a little sneak peek here of what might be next? can we say, hey, if you have a script, if you have something, if you have something that you have already done, send it to Kevin at, I don't know, you tell us. What is next for Hope Studios? What is next for Kevin?
Well, the easiest way to follow along with what we're doing is if you go to hopestudios.com, okay. or if you find us on pretty much any social media platform. We're mostly focused on Facebook, Instagram, or on YouTube. That's a good spot to sign up for updates and be informed. We are very much in the midst still of everything with the hopeful. You know, we've done our U.S. Theatrical run, but we've got an Australia and New Zealand run that's coming up in the fall.
Okay.
We've just started talking with other parts of the world, trying to get, you know, figuring out what works best for them. This hosted screening model, the theatrical release model, what languages, dubbing, translation, all those kinds of things. So mm-hmm. we still have quite a ways to go, really, throughout the rest of the year, at least,
okay.
With the hopeful.
All right.
But we have been working on a series that we actually were shooting last year, kind of along the lines of true crime, but true testimonies.
True crime, true testimonies.
Yeah.
All right.
So it kind of came from those experiences that I had when I was working on some crime shows back in the day.
Mm.
And, you know, those took off. I mean, there's two full networks that 24/7, all they do is true crime because people are so interested in like getting to the bottom of it. And this, you know, where did things go wrong with people and what happened? And it's, you know, high stakes. And the difference though is that with those, because they're entertainment And so there's not necessarily a happy ending, you know, but people are so fascinated with the journey because there's this realization that that could happen to me, right? At any point in time, something could go wrong and you could plan your life out perfectly and bam, it goes wrong. Yeah. And there's an underlying theme with a lot of testimonies that it's the same thing. A lot of these people, they're not that much different from you and I, but they make a decision at some point and that decision affects the rest of their life.
Wow.
And so I was like, man, could we take that production model, a style that we know works, and based off of the research that we did, the number one thing people want is true stories.
Mm-hmm.
Can we take that model and tell stories of hope?
So this is a true crime of a
true crime style.
True crime style.
I just use that as like a style because people are like, what is, when you say testimonies, you tend to think like, you know, someone comes up to the front of church and they share their testimony at the platform and then, you know, they walk off. And I'm like, no, that's not really that kind of docudrama style of,
got it.
You've got someone sharing their testimony. You've got, the dramatic recreation that goes with it. But you have this payoff where there's a story of hope.
Right. And how God worked in that individual's life and redeemed and restored.
Yes.
All pun intended.
That's something we've been working on.
Okay.
We are in development of.
And that's going to be a series, you said, not a film. Okay.
And, we are in development for a, true story of really extreme forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It's got a bit of an international flair to it. Right. It's a true story and, we've, you know, been able to work with acquiring the life rights to that story. And we're just kind of in talks with a number of other, really talented individuals who have that same kind of thing. They've worked in the industry to understand. I've worked with the best tent makers to go back to that analogy. And I've learned how you build the most durable tent that people connect with and want to spend some time in. And now let's build some tents with purpose. You know, let's take those skills and let's start doing films using the mechanisms that are out there, using distribution platforms that exist and working to tell stories in a way that is universally relatable to everyone who can connect with the theme of forgiveness, who can connect with the theme of disappointment and hope.
Yeah.
And sharing values that they might not be exposed to, but telling it in a manner that is publicly consumable.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how all of that develops, and we will be here to help promote it as the Lord leads.
Thank you.
I had a conversation the other day in regards to the same essence of what's next for you guys, and I'll ask it this way. With all of those projects, is there any conversations about like a part two or what happened next from the film, The Hopeful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it ends the way it ends. I'll just leave it there and people can, for those that have watched it, they obviously know. But it ends there and there's so much more to tell, right? And so many ways of telling it when it comes to our healthcare system. And we've had documentaries and things of that nature done. Our educational system as well, and just how the mission of God has been moving forward, to go back to that, and the beautiful stories within all of that. And so is there any conversations about, hey, let's think about moving another film in that realm, or is that not there yet?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is, the next thing that we want to follow up with, we want it to be intentionally different.
Okay.
Because otherwise we start to kind of pigeonhole ourselves.
Sure.
And you go, oh, that's the studio that just does Adventist history movies, right?
Sure.
Or just does period piece dramas.
Yeah.
And so our goal has never been to speak to Adventists. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create stories and films that are reaching people that are not in the pews. But sharing values with them that, you know, those in the pews hold. So we want to be intentionally different with expanding who we're reaching. But the second thing is, you know, I have people that say, oh, is what's the sequel? What's the follow-up?
Yeah, that's kind of the question that I've
either had. In film or a lot of times we'll also say like, oh, do you have resource materials, you know, for study guides? And we do have those. Mm-hmm. But you are the sequel. You are the follow-up. Mm. This was intended for the individual member to be able to connect with people when they go, man, I watched that film and I've got questions. What happens next? And that was kind of the point. You know, we had people who said, oh, I felt like there was more. And we're like, yeah, that was the point. Mm. We want people who are just engaging with this story for the first time to have questions. You know, we've done media in the past. We being the church or independent ministries, media has been done in the past where all the questions were answered.
Yeah.
And when all the questions are answered, I don't need to connect with a church member. Mm. I don't need to connect with a pastor. I already got all my questions answered. I could go to Google and it was all right there. Mm. So what was very intentional with The Hopeful was, you know, at the end we talk about Ellen becomes one of the Smithsonian Institution's top 100 most influential Americans of all time. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the fact that the Andrews family, you know, they have a university named after them.
Yeah.
We mentioned the fact that this started a much larger movement. And so what that's done is people who are not familiar with the story, and I can speak to this as a fact because we did test screenings with people who did not know this story. And, you know, we had executives who had to watch this film to evaluate it. And at every one of those occasions, we had people come back to us and they said, yeah, I was so curious. Mm. I wanted to know more. And so I started doing my own research and I started Googling things and looking up stuff.
Yeah.
And their response was really positive. I mean, in some cases, you know, we had someone who's very powerful in the music industry tell us, yeah, did you know? And started saying like facts about Ellen, facts about Adventists. And it's like, you're telling us, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was intentional, as we didn't want to just overload people with lots of information where it either feels like it's a commercial or where we give them so much information that now there's no need to connect personally. Mm, okay. And that was the goal, is that this, I don't believe that missional media is a substitute for personal evangelism. Mm. It's a tool. It's a conversation starter that leads to conversation over dinner, over, you know, some ice cream, at the park, in church, whatever that is. You know, that's where ministry happens, is in communion with each other.
Yeah. At the end of the day, nothing beats one-on-one or community conversations and coming together and speaking about Jesus.
Exactly. Mm.
Kevin, I so again appreciate your time here with us. I love these long conversations. I can go on forever, but I know that we have other appointments to go to. With that said, one final question here. If you could create any film, not worrying about funding at all, all right, you had all the funding that you needed, what kind of movie would you make and why?
I would love to do an honest, you know, no holds bar story of David.
Mm.
I actually just saw that there's a series that just got greenlit that they're going to be doing that.
Okay.
So because I don't want to like do what someone else is already doing, then I think the other version would be the story of Saul,
mm,
to Paul. Because I think that we have really whitewashed a lot of the heroes, mm, of our faith and of the Bible, and we've cleaned up the stories so much that when you clean the world up too much, there's no more need for a savior.
Mm.
And we forget the fact that these people had a really heavy journey.
Yeah,
that was filled with major mistakes, and the consistent narrative that you see with David, with Moses kicks off by murder. You know, he's a privileged kid who mm-hmm. who murder someone and then escapes to the desert. You've got Rahab, right? Yeah. Who's the town prostitute.
David made a few mistakes.
Right. You know,
being facetious, of course.
You've got all these stories of people that were just colossal, moral failures in their lives. And Paul really is, I don't know, he's just so prolific because he is passionate about murdering Christians. On fire for it. You want to talk about a guy who's dedicated, you know, top employee of the month for genocide.
Yeah.
And yet God looked at him and said, you've got potential. Who does that? Who does that?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is just so powerful. And he was able to turn his story around to redirect that passion in such an opposite direction. And you've got someone who was so prideful before, who by the end of his journey is saying, you know what? I will boast. I will boast in one thing. And that is in my weakness.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a powerful story.
Praise the Lord. Well, I look forward to you making that story into a film.
So if anyone's listening who has $100 million, please go to hopestudios.com and let us know.
There you go. You've heard it first here on the Restore Podcast. Or as long if anybody wants to write a script, right? That's at the end of the day, a story. In the manner that can be used as a film. Now, somebody's going to say, well, the story's right there in the Bible, right? That's what
and
people are going to say. And it is, of course.
Yeah.
But then how can we tell that story in a film that's back to come full circle in an hour and a half, 2 hours max, give or take, right?
And you know, I do want to say that this is a ministry. This is, you know, Hope Studios is a part of Hope Channel International.
Sure.
And we need support. You know, this stuff is not cheap to do.
Right.
It's not free to produce, and it's a lot easier to find funding in purely entertainment fashion. So we do have a bit of an uphill battle.
Sure.
And that's where, you know, I think that God has placed on certain people's hearts that this is effective evangelism and this is effective ministry. And so I do want to say, you know, if there's someone out here who is seeing what we're doing and is saying, I want to support that. And, you know, either because they're seeing it reach new people that other stuff wasn't reaching, or they're saying, wow, this is the first time that I can sit down with just even, you know, my own kids or grandkids or my friends and actually watch something that I go, oh man, my church was behind that.
Yeah.
We supported that. We made that. And it's something that we can all discuss together. You know, if you feel called to support that, please visit our website, visit hopestudios.com, or message us or let us know and say, you know, I really want to support this kind of media ministry. And you know, if you support Hope Channel International, it is a tax deductible donation.
Sure.
I'm like, how many other places can you go? Hey, I want to support like a Christian film and also get a tax deductible donation, you know, tax deduction out of it. You know, and that's what's really unique. And you know what we're about. This is what we're doing and we're not stopping with that. But the way that this stuff works is, you know, money moves the needle.
Yeah.
You can't do mission without margin.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if this is something that you want to support, please encourage sharing this stuff. Please encourage telling people about it. Please consider, you know, hosting a screening. Or, you know, if God has gifted you with the means, please consider supporting financially because this is something that we have to do together as a community.
Well, thank you, Kevin. And I think it's a great place to finish. Again, those that want to host a screening, go to thehopefulmovie.com. The link will be on the show notes, along with the website for Hope Studios and how they can get a hold of you. They can go to the website as well. Thank you for your ministry, for what you're doing, and all of the challenges and victories that the Lord has given you and that you are challenged with, as you just mentioned, moving forward. But we know that God is already using this and has blessed in many different ways. So blessings to you, blessings to Kyle's continued work and the entire staff that worked on the movie. And so may God continue to bless you, your family, and your continued ministry. And I'm going to finish with this. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Everybody's saying, what is he talking about now? Congratulations on being engaged and getting married soon here. So praise the Lord.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care, Kevin.
Well, I hope that you were blessed and, as I mentioned earlier, challenged by this conversation. Kevin, thank you so much for taking a day or two to invite me to hang out. And I had a great time and really enjoyed the fellowship and conversation and getting to know you. I'm thankful for how God has and is leading you to move forward the gospel in this space. So continued blessings to you. And again, congratulations on getting engaged. As I mentioned from the intro, make sure you go to thehopefulmovie.com and sign up to view the movie at your church or event. The link is in the show notes. Thank you again for listening, subscribing, and sharing the Restore podcast. Until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to this Restore podcast. We hope you've been blessed. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss any of our inspiring episodes.